Now Jeff Blair can tell you bedtime stories. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher and listen anytime you want. Sweet dreams. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. He was never taught to keep his opinions to himself. That's why we love him. This is The Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
God, there's wholesale confusion around here. I'll tell you what. Travis, here's what we're going to do. We got Sherman Hamilton at 10 o'clock. We got Chris Johnson at 10:15. We got some ideas for 10:40. We're going to take the 10th caller through at 416-870-0590, *590, 1-888-666-0590. 10th caller through. Whatever topic you want to talk about, that's what we're going to be talking about at 10:40. It's going to be free-form radio. Travis is late. Well, he's talking to Sherman Hamilton right now. Your Toronto Raptors get back on the court tonight against the greatest show in the NBA, the most exciting show in the NBA, the Splash Brothers. The Golden State Warriors, who I have officially declared to be my favorite team. And by the way, Travis, I know you were talking to Sherman. 10th caller through, 416-870-0590, *590, 1-888-666-0590. Find out what they want to talk about. That's what we're talking about at 10:40. Stop it. Sherman Hamilton of NBA TV Canada joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Hello, Sherman.
Hey, Jeff. How you doing?
I'm looking forward to tonight. I love the Golden State Warriors. I put it out there. I love watching them play. I was kind of surprised by what I saw last night. It was almost like they hit a wall. What type of team do you think the Raptors are going to be facing tonight when Golden State comes in?
I think they're going to face a Golden State team that's pretty angry about losing on national TV in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're going to figure, hey, second game of back-to-back, we're an elite team. We've got to prove that we're an elite team. So they're going to carry that chip on their shoulder into the Air Canada Center. I just think that you're going to get their best shot. And that's what very good teams do. They make sure that at times when opponents might feel that they might have a letdown, they come strong. And I think if they're going to be a championship caliber team, games like this in the doldrums of February, March, and you have every reason to walk away from a game and quit on it, the great teams don't, and I think the Raptors are going to face a stiff challenge tonight.
Sherm, we've seen the offense, the offensive efficiency. I'm talking about the Raptors now. We've seen their offensive efficiency come under scrutiny during this road trip, during those three losses. You know, some concern about the defense as well in terms of fourth quarter defense, in terms of the defense appearing to take the odd trip up and down the floor off. But I'm looking at the numbers, and since the break, the Raps have 13.5, are averaging 13.5 steals. That's the best in the NBA during that time. They're fifth in the NBA in opponent scoring during the month of February. They've held their opponents to less than 100 points in 6 and 9 games this month. So you get the sense that they are tightening up defensively, but I also get the sense that there's still some dissatisfaction with the defense. Can you walk me through that a bit?
Yeah, and this is one of those scenarios where, you know, the numbers don't lie, but they don't tell the whole story.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you look at a game like Houston, the Raptors had 25 turnovers themselves, but they did turn Houston over 25 times. So it's kind of a cancellation effect right there. It looks good in terms of the turnovers they created, but they coughed it up as well. And when you talk about defensive efficiency, we'll take a look at the New Orleans game where the Raptors did a great job in the first half, limiting the New Orleans Hornets in terms of their offensive output. But in the second half, I believe New Orleans shot over 60%. So now it skews that whole process. And you go real low in the first half, second half, you give it all back. So the numbers are telling a certain story. And what it says to me, Jeff, is that they can be a good defensive team. They have the potential and the ability to be a good defensive team. But the reality is what Dwayne Casey's harping on is the consistency, the determination to be that team. And that's where the issue lies, I think, for Dwayne. He wants his team to buy in defensively and consistently play that brand of defense. We're seeing spots of it. We're just not seeing it every possession, every night.
Who do you think is the key to that? Is there a person who has to be the key to that, or is it a systems thing? Is it a group?
Well, ultimately, it's a group impacting. I think everybody has to buy in, and everybody has to fulfill their role. And to me, that's when you have a great team in terms of defense. But the reality is, in every situation, you want leaders to emerge. You want your main guys to lead the team. And when things go a bit crazy or they start to forget who they are, you want your lead guys or your leaders to snap everybody back into place and challenge them to get into position. And I think when you look at it from that perspective, Jeff, you got to say guys like Kyle Lowry, DeMar DeRozan, even in Amir Johnson, who's not as vocal, but he's a leader for this team. Guys like that, you expect to step up and kind of pull the thing in the right direction when things get off balance. It's not a surprise, Jeff. As you know, in professional sports, all teams go through phases of a season where they don't have everything working and in the same order. That's okay. It's about how quickly you can correct that and how quickly you can get your team back on track. And I think that's where the leadership comes into play.
In conversation with Sherman Hamilton, Raptors analyst on NBA TV Canada, the Raptors get back on the court tonight against the Golden State Warriors. Tomorrow they will play the New York Knicks. You can see that game on Sportsnet Ontario. We talked with callers earlier in the show, and indeed most of Toronto this morning, talking about the Leafs trade, David Clarkson for Nathan Horton, essentially the Leafs writing off $27.5 million of Nathan Horton's salary without having it count against the salary cap. And Sherman, I was trying to put it in some sort of context compared to some of the other salary escapes we've seen general managers do. Alex Anthopoulos, of course, got rid of $86 million worth of Vernon Wells. Masai Ujiri got rid of Andrea Bargnani, got a first-round pick in return, a couple of second-round picks as well. And I asked people to sort of rank the moves. It's remarkable how many people really looked at the Bargnani move as being, of the three, as being the greatest escape. Can we go back to your thoughts when you saw Masai make that deal? How surprised were you that he was able to get draft picks for Andrea Bargnani?
I wasn't surprised. I think one thing Masai has shown, especially in Denver, was his ability to be patient and wait for the deal that he wants. Now, I think the impact that trade had was more in the fact that, yeah, they got draft picks back, but Masai came in and saw that Andrea Bargnani was not fitting. He wasn't, in terms of being engaged in the process, he didn't see him as a future part. And I think when you extract that, and Andrea Bargnani was very polarizing. I mean, some people just loved his skill set, and other people thought he would never be a player. So there was no middle ground with that guy. And I think when you have a player like that, and Masai Ujiri looks at his history and says, has he lived up to his potential? Forget the number one draft pick overall, but his potential as a player, the skills that he has, the motivation to play the game, the thing that you want from a lead guy, has he got that? No. So Masai decided to move him. And I think that was the biggest impact. The picks that came back, that was just Masai wheeling and dealing and getting the best value he could for him. But I think you'll agree, the fact that he wasn't in a Raptor uniform created a lot of relief for a lot of players thinking that this guy wasn't going to help the franchise anymore, and that was the popular opinion at the time.
Yeah, and I think also there was a sense here with David Clarkson, I think, that first we'll deal with Vernon Wells. Vernon Wells had some good years here. Vernon Wells got hurt. Vernon Wells' biggest issue, frankly, and I don't think people in Toronto give him enough credit for this, Vernon Wells' biggest issue was that he absolutely refused to not play hurt. He played hurt, and he exacerbated the injuries that he had as a result of it. He had some pretty good years here. Andrea had a couple of years, and people, I mean, we are big in revisionist history in sports. People tend to forget a couple of good years Andrea had. A great half at one point in one season until he was hurt. But for some reason, I think Bargnani became the focal point of bad drafts, bad decisions. It was almost as if everything that happened to the Raptors kind of came back on him. Hedo Turkoglu, he had nothing to do with that, but it came back to him. You know, even Chris Bosh's situation came back to him. Vince Carter, it was almost like everything bad that happened to the Raptors, Sherman, somehow it seemed to focus on Andrea Bargnani.
Yeah, you're right. He did become somewhat of a scapegoat during his time here. And it wasn't fair, obviously. I mean, he was drafted first overall. It wasn't his choice. Brian Colangelo made the decision to draft him first overall. And we all know what comes with that title. When you're first overall, the expectations are through the roof. Just ask Anthony Bennett, the Canadian, when he was drafted number one overall and what they're saying about him now because he hasn't been able to prove the value of a number one pick. But you're right. And for Andrea, you know, I look at him and I talk about his skill set, which was amazing at his size. But I think at the crux of it, Jeff, he didn't have the motor that you needed.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have that fire in his belly every night to go out there and dominate. And you made a great point. There was half of a season where he played unbelievable lights-out basketball.
Right.
And I think all of us looked at it and said, that's what we've been waiting for. Then he got injured, and it never came back. And I think that was just a tease, or that was just enough to tip people over the precipice of saying, we're done with him. Once we saw it, you took it back. You're not showing it to us anymore. We're done with you. And I think that's what Masai Ujiri saw and just kind of laid it out for the future and said, is this guy going to be able to get back to that point? His decision was probably not. Let's move forward and make some moves that are going to help us down the road.
Sherman, as always, it was great to talk to you.
Thanks a lot, Jeff. Take care.
Take care. With Sherman Hamilton, Raptors analyst, NBA TV Canada. Follow him on Twitter, at Sherman Hamilton. The Raptors, first home game in 16 days because of the All-Star break and that road trip. They welcome the league's best team, the Golden State Warriors. The Splash Brothers, Klay Thompson, Stephen Curry, coming to town. And then the Raps head to New York tomorrow night to play the Knicks. We'll have that game on Sportsnet Ontario. That'll be a 7 p.m. pregame show, followed by 7:30 tip-off, Matt Devlin and Leo Routens doing the duty. That's, of course, if you don't want to watch hockey. If you do want to watch hockey, do we have hockey for you on Saturday? The Leafs play the Montreal Canadiens. That game will be right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, as well as the CBC tomorrow night. Of course, Hockey Nation, our Hockey Nation pregame from 5 to 7 p.m. with Stellick and Osborne. That'll precede the Leafs-Canadiens game. Hockey Central Saturday with Merrick Stock and John Shen, and that'll be on Sportsnet 360 at 5. Hockey Night in Canada's pregame, the usual suspects, Strombo, Kiprias, Friedman, and Rudy. That'll be at 6:30 on CBC. Puck drop just after 7 p.m. with Bowen and Joe Bowen and Jim Ralph on the radio. It'll be Houston, Simpson, Healy, Oak on TV as the Leafs play the Montreal Canadiens. And, of course, our Leafs Nation postgame after the final horn with Stellick and Osborne on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. So there you go. Lots of hoops, lots of hockey tomorrow night as well. Got to mention, by the way, as we wait, as we await Chris Johnson, Dean Blundell and company hits the airwaves on Monday. That's this coming Monday at 5:30 a.m. That's our new morning show with Dean Blundell, George Russick, Ryan Fabro, Kayla Harris, and Helena Balka. And it's going to be a lot of guests right out of the gate for Blundell and Co. on Monday. And indeed through the week, Paul Beeston, Don Cherry, Charles Barkley, among others. And John Torrey will probably make an appearance, DeMar DeRozan, Russell Martin, Daniel Norris. I'm sure they'll be on from Dunedin. Again, that's Dean Blundell and Co., our new morning show, 5:30 to 9 a.m. on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And then, of course, we'll pick it up at 9 to noon. And Monday, we'll be doing a simulcast as part of our Hockey Central trade deadline coverage. We'll be on Sportsnet Ontario from 9 to 12 with the Blair Show. And then, of course, Hockey Central will pick it up, and they'll have a special edition of trade deadline coverage with Tim and Sid through the afternoon. And hopefully, NHL general managers, hopefully some of them will save some of their trades. Don't want them to use it all up. Otherwise, as I said in Twitter yesterday, all these ex-players, all these ex-coaches, all these ex-GMs, better bring some anecdotes because it's going to be a long freaking day. Chris Johnson of Sportsnet will be part of our trade deadline day coverage. He's our NHL insider today. He joins us in the Jeff Blair Show. Chris, what are you going to do if all the trades are used up?
It won't happen. We have this talk every year, not you and I.
I know we do.
But there will still be deals. There's a lot of teams that are still anxious to make moves. You know, I said this a couple days ago before the Clarkson deal, but there's a lot of appetite, I think, to do big and creative things. And I think we still have a few more surprises to come, whether it's this weekend or Monday, but it's going to be a very active few days here around the NHL.
Well, Chris, I looked at this. Let's see. So far, we've had an untradeable contract traded. We've had Jaromir Jagr go to a team that nobody thought Jaromir Jagr would go to, the Florida Panthers, a deal that I happen to like, by the way, in my own odd sort of way. And we've seen, and you pointed this out, we've seen teams, I don't know if you could say teams have overpaid for some of the players they've acquired to, but it's certainly a seller's market. I mean, if you've got a defenseman, you want to move a defenseman, as Carolina showed, it's a pretty good market to move it in right now.
Well, it is, and, you know, I think some of that is because the standings, you know, there's a lot of teams that are clearly out of it, which we don't always have quite this number, and I also think there's general managers who are looking at this league and their team's position in it, and it's kind of wide open this year. I mean, especially the East, but I even think out West. I mean, L.A. would probably be the team right now if you absolutely said you're betting your house who's going to win the Cup. I still think they're going to get it done again, but they're barely in the playoff picture at this point, and I really think it's kind of we've had kind of reshuffling of the deck this season, and I don't see a lot of clear cut, you know, dominant teams, and it's going to make the playoffs even better than normal. I think that's why general managers are trying to use these last couple of days to try to strengthen their chances.
Chris, does this move in some ways buy the Leafs a little bit of time? Like, I don't necessarily, I mean, I think the trade market functions, emotion plays a part of it, but I think the trade market, especially in a salary cap league, really functions according to some sort of basic business principles. And obviously, if you're the Leafs and somebody comes along and makes you an offer for Dion Phaneuf that you like, you're going to probably take it regardless of the time that it's offered to you. But I'm wondering if maybe getting out from under David Clarkson's contract doesn't buy David Nonis, Brendan Shanahan, Mark Hunter, and Kyle Dubas a little bit of time with the fan base, and maybe means that we'll see the Leafs hang on to Dion Phaneuf, especially because I think we both agree Phil Kessel's not going anywhere, but Dion Phaneuf especially until the summer to make a move, because they've made a pretty significant move for their rebuild in getting rid of Clarkson's deal.
Well, you know, I'm kind of two minds of this. I mean, certainly if they don't make another trade before Monday, I don't think anyone would be critical of them or suggest that they weren't active or, you know, doing what they can to start the rebuild. But, you know, I really believe the Leafs are going to try to be aggressive here in these next few days and move out a couple more guys. And, you know, there's no guarantee they'll be able to do that because, you know, we're getting into the players now, you know, outside of an Ole Jokinen, for example. We're getting into the players that are tougher to deal because there's multiple years remaining on their contracts. But, you know, the Leafs aren't done by any means at this point. And you know, I think they're kind of riding a good wave. And I do think they'll be busy working the phones before Monday. And I won't be surprised to see another deal. I mean, it might not be enough. That's going to be the toughest probably contract of them all to move. But, you know, it's certainly possible. I definitely didn't think David Clarkson was getting traded. I don't think reasonably anybody did, probably including the Leafs front office until the last, you know, few weeks or whatever the timeline was and when they started speaking with Columbus on that deal. But, you know, the Leafs, they'll have more to do and they have more flexibility that they have to get with their salary cap situation. And I think they'll be aggressive.
Chris, at some point, do we need to maybe step back from this, you know, and stop the cheering and ask the question why it didn't work out? That a hometown player couldn't come back here and be successful. Doesn't Don Cherry keep telling us that the problem with the Leafs is that they don't have enough good Ontario boys here and you've got to get guys who bleed blue and white here? Well, they had a guy in David Clarkson who bled blue and white who grew up in Mimico. It didn't work out. Like, do we need to maybe kind of step back for a minute and just say, what does this say about this market that, I mean, this should have been a perfect fit. It should have been a perfect fit.
Yeah, but it wasn't from day one. You know, honestly, going back to July 5th, 2013, the day he was signed, I think everyone who left that day, that press conference, you just knew he wasn't getting to the seventh year of this contract in Toronto.
Okay.
I mean, Dave Notice basically acknowledged as much that day with his comments. And, You know, I think David Clarkson was the wrong guy to bet on. I mean, there's no other way to look at it. I think he had one 40-point season in his career before coming to Toronto. He was 29 when he was signed, which is, you know, beyond where you can be an offensive contributor generally in this league. And to give him a seven-year deal at that point, the longest in franchise history, and make him, you know, one of your highest-paid forwards, I just think it was doomed for failure from the start because he essentially, especially this year, if you look at his career, he actually played the way he plays this year. Mm-hmm. But he was being judged by, you know, the expectations that come with his contract. And I think justifiably so. But as a result, it was a doomed partnership. In a salary cap world, you know, loyalty is getting out of this a little bit. Sentimentality is getting out of this.
Right.
You know, being a hometown boy, the intangibles. You know, I think in hockey that it's changing a lot with a salary cap, the way teams are looked at it and players and assets. And he was massively overpaid for what he could contribute to the team. And as a result, he was going to feel that criticism. And, you know, the one thing I'll say, and Dave Milner said it last night, I don't think anyone actually questioned, you know, he was in great shape. He tried. He wanted to make a difference. But he was put in a position to fail. And that's exactly what happened.
Chris, I'm going to let you run. It's been a hectic day yesterday. My guess is it's going to be a hectic couple of days. And hopefully, knock on wood, hopefully it'll be a hectic Monday as well. Thanks for doing this, man.
No problem, Jeff. Have a good weekend.
It's Chris Johnson. You can follow him on Twitter at ReporterChris. It's our Sportsnet.ca insider, NHL insider from Sportsnet.ca. And again, just to run down what's going to happen Monday, because we will be your destination for everything as it relates to the NHL trade deadline. Love Hockey Central trade deadline coverage all day on Monday. That will begin at 8 a.m. on Sportsnet Ontario, Sportsnet.ca, and Sportsnet Now. Our list of analysts include Darren Millard, Mike Johnson, Nick Kypreos, Kelly Rudy, Christine Simpson, Elliot Friedman, Chris Johnson, John Shannon, Jeff Merrick, Glenn Healy, Doug McLean, Darren Pang, Craig Simpson, Damian Cox, Strombo, Sophia Jerskowitz, and our reporters from across the country. We will have radio coverage simulcast on Sportsnet 360. That'll be from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. It will be from the Hockey Central studio. And, of course, don't forget Dean Blundell and company will premiere at 5:30 a.m. on Monday. So they will get you set for NHL trade deadline day. And as I said, I'm hoping that they don't use up all the deals. Kevin Barker of Baseball Central will be joining us at 11 o'clock. We're going to talk a little baseball in the 11 o'clock hour. A little bit of news yesterday with the Blue Jays. Probably got lost in the shuffle, the David Clarkson shuffle. In addition, of course, to Michael Saunders, the opening day left fielder, being hurt. And out until the All-Star break, the Blue Jays signed Johan Santana to a minor league contract. Left-handed pitcher coming off a series of shoulder injuries, a series of stillborn returns to the major leagues. A no-risk signing and a product of the relationship that Alex Anthopoulos and the Blue Jays have with his agent, Peter Greenberg, who also represents Jose Reyes, among other players. He represents Melky Cabrera as well. He and Alex Anthopoulos, his agency and Alex Anthopoulos, have a real good working relationship. And so consequently, right from the start, I thought, if Johan Santana ends up settling for a minor league deal, the chances were pretty good that it was going to be with the Blue Jays. So it is a minor league deal. The Jays will look at him. I've not spoken to anybody with the Jays. I had people on Twitter ask me yesterday, do you think that there's a chance that the Jays, if his arm can handle it, move him into the bullpen? I don't know. I don't even think we're at that stage yet with Johan Santana. I think this is one of those things. Let's get him in camp. Let's see what he looks like. Let's see how he responds to working on consecutive days or working on a regular routine. Let's get him into some games and go from there and then make a decision on him. It's a totally, totally no-risk venture on the part of the Blue Jays. And I, frankly, I kind of like it. I mean, if I'm going to take a flyer on a guy, I'll take a flyer on a guy with a pedigree. And I know that part of the thought process with the Blue Jays is if this guy can at all pitch, at all, if there's anything left, if he can stay healthy, perhaps we can get something out of him even early in the year when it's going to be important that the Jays get off to a hot start. So it's to me, it's a no-brainer to take a shot on Johan Santana. So we'll talk to Kevin Barker about that. Ray Ratto joins us at 11:40. We'll talk about the Golden State Warriors. Xavier Rathan-Mays. That's what I said. Xavier Rathan-Mays of the Florida State Seminoles. He's a guy that scored, was it 30 points in 4 minutes? Yeah, something like that. That's pretty good. Very good. The Florida State Seminoles. He's going to join us at 11:30. And so there you go. A baseball, basketball talk. When we come back, going to continue talking about the David Clarkson deal. Aaron Portsline covers the Blue Jackets for the Columbus Post-Dispatch. He'll join us on the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Guess what? We got baseball on TV on Tuesday. Silly me. I've been giving you all the other stuff. I forgot about baseball. Sportsnet Ontario will have Jays baseball at 12:30. Oh, my God. Grapefruit League baseball. Hear that sound? That's my tail wagging if I was a dog. That did not come across on the air as well as I thought it would be. Anyhow, Grapefruit League baseball, Pittsburgh and Toronto at 12:30. 1 o'clock will be the first pitch. 12:30 will be the pregame show. Buck Martinez, Joe Siddle with the call of the game. Mike Wilner. Oh, Mike Wilner. Mike Wilner will have the call of the game in Sportsnet590.ca along with a cast of thousands. There'll be people going in and out helping Mike analyze the situation. And there you go. Blue Jays and Pirates. Tuesday. Sportsnet Ontario. Baseball be back. And you'll only hear it on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Kevin Barker of Baseball Central will join me at 11 o'clock. By the way, we'll mull over the signing of Johan Santana. We'll talk a little bit about Michael Saunders' injury. I'll ask Kevin what's the silliest injury he had as a ball player. You know, it always happens, right? People always come up with lists when a guy goes down with an injury, silliest injury, and then he kind of realized, you know, silly injury. I mean, guys get hurt. There's nothing silly about it. But when I covered the Montreal Expos, Brett Barbary went on the disabled list when he got hot sauce in his eye. He was eating a taco in the clubhouse. Without the word of a lie, eating a taco in the clubhouse, and had some hot sauce in his fingers, rubbed his eyes, went on the disabled list. A vision issue. He actually went on to marry somebody significant, the Jill Barbary, the weather woman, or whatever she was. Yeah, that's right, the NFL woman on Fox. Yeah, she really added a lot to the broadcast, as I remember. Oh, why don't you tell me, Aaron Portsline of the Columbus Dispatch joined us. Here I'm going on about Jill Barbary. I've got Aaron Portsline on hold. So, Aaron, first of all, thank you so much for doing this. Secondly, explain what happened yesterday.
Well, hang on, I got hot sauce in my eye.
That ain't hot sauce in your eye, my friend.
Hey. What happened? My God, the Blue Jackets traded a player whose career might be over for a player who Toronto seems to think his career is over. And they were, you know, I mean, it's a pretty unusual trade. I don't recall a trade like this. I think it caught everybody by surprise because Toronto thought it was a player whose contract could not ever be moved. And nobody in Columbus expected Nathan Horton to be any part of a trade deadline move, because who wants a guy who's probably never going to play again? Well, of course, a team that can eat his contract and claim his cap room is who wants him. So that's what went down yesterday. But it's a very multi-layered situation.
Yeah, I was going to say, even if he doesn't play a shift for the Leafs, he is already at worst, I would bet, their third best forward right now. So
isn't it weird? Like, that's the Leafs' perspective, and from the Columbus perspective, it is. If Clarkson is, even if he's no better than he is with the Leafs right now, at least they're getting something.
Right.
That's how they see it. And in a way, this works for both teams. For right now, it achieves the goals of both teams. It's an interesting trade.
Hey, Aaron, explain to me, because I know you talked about this on Twitter and also on your story. Explain to me the whole issue with insurance, because, yeah. I mean, the Blue Jackets are being slammed for the way they approach this. But I spoke to somebody who, you know, used to be an NHL executive. They're not now, but not that long ago. And he said he'd be surprised how many teams don't have insurance in some of their contracts.
Yeah, well, the situation with Horton is specifically peculiar, because he came to them needing a shoulder surgery, and everybody knew that. That was not news. They signed him knowing this was going to happen. And they knew he was going to miss more than half of his first season. It was that profound of a surgery. So they could not get insurance to cover his shoulder, because it was a pre-existing situation. And it didn't make sense to buy insurance on the rest of him that year, because there was no other injury he could suffer that would force him to miss half of that season. He'd already missed half of that season with his shoulder, and that's the point at which the money kicked in. Now, I've talked to people who say, I understand what their thinking was. It's a slight risk, but I understand it, and they got burned. But I've also talked to other people who say, you got to have insurance, because now the insurance going forward covers him. And what happened is, he came back the next year when they tried to get insurance, and his back had degenerated, to such an extent that they could not get insurance again. And now they're stuck with who has a degenerative back issue, and they can't get insurance on him. And that's why they were on the hook for all $27 million if they didn't trade him.
What does Columbus think they're getting in terms of a player with David Clarkson? You know, look, when he came to Toronto, I think a lot of people, you know, after we sort of got over the shock of how much they were going to be paying him, I think a lot of people looked at this deal and said, well, you know what? He's the type of guy that can help you when you get to the playoffs. You know, he's got that pedigree. He's got that rep. So if you're a team that is looking at getting into the playoffs and maybe going in a playoff run, it makes a certain amount of sense. Now, of course, the Leafs' biggest issue is that they haven't come close to making the playoffs since then. What do the Blue Jackets think they're getting in David Clarkson?
Yeah, well, if you hear the description from the Blue Jackets front office, it sounds a lot like the description of the Maple Leafs front office when they signed him. I think Clarkson's one of those players where, and I don't mean this to be overly derogatory, if you don't expect too much, you won't be let down. I think he's one of those guys who thrives in a situation where he's not expected to be the leader, where he's a plus third-line type player, where he's a second-line fit if the other two guys are just right. That's what he was in New Jersey, and the 30 goals can blind you and convince you of a player who's not. The comparisons to Wendell Clark are absurd. And as Scott Hartnell said yesterday, a lot of times when a big ticket, all the time when a big ticket player goes to Toronto, people expect 40 goals, 40 fights. And David Clarkson has never played under that weight. He's always been sort of a quiet, successful player. That's what he was in New Jersey. You look at the stat sheet and you're surprised at his numbers. You don't consider David Clarkson. He had the one great year. Other than that, he's been an average player. And I think Columbus sees a situation here where they can recreate a bit what he had in New Jersey, where this is still Ryan Johansson is the star offensive player. Brandon Dubinsky is the loud offensive player everybody pays attention to. And they've got some young players coming. David Clarkson does not arrive here as the savior as he did in Toronto, and they think maybe he could thrive in that situation.
In terms of system, Aaron, how close is Todd Richard's system to what David Clarkson had some success with in New Jersey? Are there any similarities?
I think there are some similarities. I mean, I don't know that Columbus doesn't trap and plug up as much, and I wouldn't describe them as a transition team. They're not a possession team in the truest sense. I mean, everybody wants to be, of course. But this is still a pitch it in and go get it team. That's what they try to do. They try to wear teams down. And you know what? I mean, maybe that does work for Clarkson. Go to the net. I mean, you know, Scott Hartnell's not fleet of foot. He never was. He's slowed down, certainly, since the start of his career. He's having a pretty good year in Columbus. I wonder where Clarkson fits on this team. I wonder who his best centerman might be, with Johansson, with Dubinsky, with Anisimov down the middle. There's some interesting things they can do there. The system they play here is not at all like it is in Toronto. And so maybe that alone will be a breath of fresh air for him.
Aaron, it was great of you to join us. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thanks, sir.
Take care. That's Aaron Portsline. Does a terrific job covering the Columbus Blue Jackets for the Columbus Dispatch. I believe I call them the Post-Dispatch, which is my producer Travis McKenzie points out. In fact, the St. Louis newspaper. I get my dispatches mixed up. So there you go. Actually, if you get a chance, I don't know, Travis, can you send out a link to Aaron's story? Because it's really he covers the whole insurance aspect really well, and explains or walks you through the process by which the Blue Jackets didn't have insurance on Nathan Horton's contract. You know, because I think your initial reaction when you find out that is, how the hell couldn't you get insurance on it? Then you read Aaron's story and you realize that he had a pre-existing condition. And it was already, the insurance had already covered the shoulder injury. You're not going to take out more insurance while the guy is injured with the shoulder. You're not going to take out more insurance and say, let's take out insurance covering the possibility of a back injury while the guy's in hospital being treated for his shoulder. So, in some ways, the Blue Jackets screwed up, but in some ways, it was almost a perfect storm. And bottom line is, the Leafs are paying $27.5 million to have Nathan Horton not play so they can clear $5 million a year off their salary cap. Glenn McCarthy asked a question. Come on, what did Columbus get? Anything for the money they were spending anyhow as a bonus? Hashtag Leafs media so warped. From Columbus's point of view, Glenn, you're absolutely right. I mean, you're spending the money. If you're Columbus, you're spending the money. You're going to spend $5.3 million on Nathan Horton. If you don't make this deal, you're still spending $5.3 million. Doesn't matter. It's not going to go away. And that counts against cap. Doesn't matter. I'm sorry, it doesn't count against cap because you can put him in a long-term injured reserve. But that's an ownership group that can't just cut a check for $5 million bucks a year and see it evaporate into thin air. So instead, they're getting an overpaid player, but a guy who at least will be able to play for him. They are, from Columbus's point of view, maximizing what they could possibly get out of $5 million bucks. That's like a rescue mission for the Columbus Blue Jackets. That's exactly what it is. And one of the points that was made on Twitter earlier that I find really fascinating, and I think it needs to be said, I think it needs to be mentioned, I hope it's mentioned often, I hope it's mentioned often in the next month or so. Everybody hammers on Leafs ownership. They hammer on this company, Rogers Communications. They hammer on Bell. They hammer on Larry Tannenbaum. And I'm going to say they. I include myself in that group. We quite often hammer on Leafs ownership. But think about what they've done. They have taken the one thing they have a ton of, and that's money. And they have basically decided to pay a guy $27.5 million to stay away. They basically decided that it's okay to spend $5.5 million a year, or whatever it is, $5.3 million a year, to have a guy sit in the sidelines because it doesn't count against the salary cap. compared to paying $5.2 million to have a guy play not very well and count against your salary cap. So the next time you hammer Leafs ownership, ask yourself this question. And I'm not, I don't want to come across as a shill for Leafs ownership, because I don't have to. But ask yourself if the Leafs under the teacher's pension plan would cut that type of check to get this deal done. I mean, it's possible. But I kind of doubt it. So I'm just throwing that out there. You know, we'll talk about it. We'll have to have a discussion about this at some point. But I'm just throwing that out there because it is easy to hammer on ownership. And in this city, there's this, and I run into it time and again, and it kind of drives me nuts. People talk about MLSE, and the more they talk about it, somehow it gets back to people have this idea that they won't spend money, which is just stupid. You're in a salary cap league. You're going to spend money. I mean, this organization spends money. Its problem is it quite often doesn't spend money in the proper places. When I say this organization, I mean MLSE. So I'm throwing that out there. The next time you hammer in Leafs ownership. And it's fair to hammer in Leafs ownership for decisions. Bad decisions, that's fine. But the next time you hammer in Leafs ownership, ask yourself this question. Do the previous owners of this team, does the previous ownership structure of this team sign off on this deal? I doubt it. Time to talk a little baseball. Kevin Barker, who we haven't announced this yet, but I believe will be in Baseball Central this year along with yours truly. Kevin Barker is going to join us at 11 o'clock. Blue Jays players are on the field today. It is the first official day of workouts, the first full day of workouts in Dunedin. We'll have Grapefruit League baseball for you on Tuesday, the Blue Jays Grapefruit League opener from Dunedin, from the face, Florida Auto Exchange Stadium. Pittsburgh Pirates against the Toronto Blue Jays. It'll be on Sportsnet590.ca with Mike Wilner and a bunch of people. Joe Siddle and Buck Martinez will have the call of the game in Sportsnet Ontario. So it's time to talk a little baseball with Kevin Barker. Time to talk a little hoops with Xavier Ratan-Mays. The Florida State Seminoles guard. The kid went off for a bunch of points in 4.5 minutes a couple of nights ago. And then Ray Ratto, columnist with CSN Bay Area. One of our favorites. Ray Ratto is going to join us. And we're not going to talk about the Raiders. We're not going to talk about the Giants. Hell, we're not even going to talk about the Sharks. We're going to talk about the Golden State Warriors, the best show on hardwood in town tonight against the Toronto Raptors. Lots of baseball talk, lots of hoops. This is a Jeff Blair Show. This is Sportsnet 590, The Fan.